The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
Now, our next guest has business interests in China, the United States, Poland, and a development project in Uganda. Morris Healy runs the Healy Group. They specialise in importing and exporting food ingredients, pharmaceuticals, and chemicals. Morris grew up in Skibbereen in County Cork, and we'll come to that in a second. But first, Morris, tell us about how you ended up in business in China.
I happened to be travelling to China on my way to Japan and stopped off 10 years ago. Came across this very small business, which was involved in a nutraceutical, and over a couple of weeks, I bought it.
A couple of weeks.
I actually was there, we say, in May, and I came back in June and concluded the deal.
And what do you do there?
We source and contract manufacture health nutritional products like vitamin C. I use vitamin C because it's easier to understand. Amino acid profiled products that go into supplements. And the supplements are consumed by both humans and by animals.
So that raw material for supplements is exported, is it, out of China?
We take it out of China and we ship it all over the world. North America was an exceptionally high market for us. Before the previous incumbent in the White House was there, we had a business in excess of 25 million. And as soon as President Trump introduced the tariffs, that business dropped by two-thirds, literally overnight.
That must have been quite a shock. Did you find yourself looking at late-night news channels and reading Donald Trump's tweets to see whether a comment or was going to affect your business?
Interesting, in actual fact. I'm ashamed to say it, but I actually did have him on tweet. And that was more to do for more curiosity and fun and to see what any human being was capable of saying. I think that the thing that mattered most was the uncertainty of what he wasn't doing. In other words, that I lost business not because I wasn't competitive. I lost business because people wouldn't buy because they didn't know what was going to happen next. And because of the transit time from China to the United States, he could have actually imposed a tariff while the product was on the high seas, and did. I had to stop trading. I effectively stopped. I couldn't run the risk because my margin wasn't great enough. If you impose a 10% margin on a product on the high seas, I lost my business and I lost my margin.
There's a new president, new administration. That could all swing back again. Are you hoping that's what will happen?
I'm quite certain that will swing back in a matter of 12 or 18 months.
Going back to the start of your career, we're talking about businesses in Poland and China and all of that. The start of your working life was much more humble beginnings. Tell me about that. You came up from Cork, you went to Dublin, and you worked with Harry Crosby Sr.
Yeah, I remember I started in Skibbereen like in 1953, so that wasn't yesterday. And I grew up in a family where there were nine siblings, or nine of us and my mum and dad. And therefore, like, getting to Dublin was the only option in 1971. I happened to be fortunate. My uncle actually was close to Harry Crosby Sr., who ran a transport company in Moby Road, and he got me a job literally in a matter of days. And I worked
for Harry.
I was actually everything. I was working in the office, but while I was there, like, I learned how to drive a forklift and even an articulated truck. I was only there for a year. And funny, like, I asked Harry for a rise. I was on 12 quid a week. And I said to Harry, literally on a Friday afternoon, I said, Harry, I could do with a few bob more, like maybe a couple of quid, like as a rise. I was there a year. And he said, why? I said, I'm here at 7 o'clock in the morning. I don't get home till 10 o'clock. I said, I do deserve it. Now, the same man would give you a fiver on a Friday afternoon without asking him. But he said, no. I said, well, under those circumstances, I'll leave. He said, under those circumstances, you're fired. So on a Friday afternoon, I was out of a job. But I was fortunate again. I got another job very quickly in Dublin Maritime. And then I went on to a very, very, very fine company in Leeson Street called National Chemical Company. So I had a checkered career. Never had any ambition, really, to set up my own business, which is a rather interesting side of it as well. I was very happy being employed.
Now, going back to the start, growing up in Skibbereen and Cork, big family, nine children. What was that like?
Well, interesting again, like I said, nine. My older brothers, the three older brothers next year, were well and truly gone, like at a very early age. They went to work in England. My brother, who passed away in 2013, in fact, went to England when he was just 14 or early 15. He left school when he was 14, so he was in England. Now, he went on to join the British Army when he got to the age, but he worked over on the building sites when he was in his 15, 16. And I was the first of the nine.
It must have been unusual to join the British Army from Cork, wasn't it?
Not necessarily, because there's a huge tradition in my family on my mum's side of the British Army going back to the 19th century. So there was a kind of a semi-tradition there, and I had an ambition myself to join the army. Thankfully, I failed because I didn't have enough Irish.
Your dad died quite young, which would have put a lot of pressure on your mom.
Yeah, dad died in 1967, and that was my mum's second husband. I have no imagination of what that would have felt like for my mum. I was 13. Like, what would have meant to her? Which, again, put more pressure on us to succeed in some part, to be of assistance to her, because she was running a very small restaurant in Skibbereen. And yeah, I can imagine it must have been terrible. I don't think we ever really got to understand how difficult that was, because she never really imparted that to us.
You know? Even years later, she didn't necessarily say
it. Oh, she was a great talker, because she could talk till the cows come home, and like, she was loved and adored right through her life. And yes, she told stories, but she never imparted the bad parts of those stories, because she ended up in Donegal and married a man from Greencastle, and had a wonderful life with him before she passed away herself. So, she had four husbands, yeah.
That's a full life.
Yeah, but it was. I'm sure that if she was alive today, she said yes. It was a full life. Four of them. Yeah. Now three of them died, by the way, and she died before the fourth one did. So she was a wonderful woman. Like she was everything to us, and still is. She had, like, her anniversary was only last week. Like, we have wonderful time remembering the way she was. Now, she was tough. Like, she was as tough as nails, but she was wonderful.
Do you think you got your entrepreneurial instincts from your mother then?
Well, she lived well past my dad, so I can only assume that is true. But I'm hopeful that I have some part of my father's DNA. But she was an entrepreneur all her life. She was selling cakes when we lived in a small house in Cork Road. She built our first restaurant, the Carberry Restaurant. And she had numbers of other businesses in her life. She was constantly looking at opportunities to make money and become a business lady. And she was. Like, she was... no doubt my influencer right through my life.
You were the first one in the family to do your Leaving Cert.
Yeah, and then thankfully the rest followed me. Again, that was circumstances. Again, if you put it into timelines, like, free education wasn't introduced until the early 70s or the early 60s. But if it wasn't there, my older brothers, by the way, didn't have that opportunity, and you had to pay to get into secondary school.
And with the Leaving Cert, and you wanted to get out working, you talked about... you wanted to join the cadets, that didn't work out. Was there a certain amount of pressure and financial pressure on you then to get a job and start earning?
Oh, for God's sake, as soon as I finished, the day I finished my leaving certificate, she threw me out. That was it. Good luck. Up to Dublin. And then, of course, I met the love of my life, Adelaide, and I was married in 1975.
So for you, after moving to Dublin, you worked with Harry Crosby Sr., the father of the well-known Harry Crosby now. You got a job then with a chemical company.
I went to work for Dublin Maritime first, and then went to work for a national chemical company. I was there nearly 10 years with them, and a fantastic company, and again a hugely successful company to this day.
They were what, exporting?
They
chemicals,
were importers,
importing
chemical trading importers. Yeah.
You saw your own niche at some point while working for that business. You thought, I could set up on my own. There was an entrepreneurial spark there.
I think it possibly was there. Maybe about 1982, 83, I began to think about it as a possibility. And I had a very good friend, again, to this day, Sean Whelan, and he encouraged me to have a look at it. And he put a business plan together. And with the business plan, I was able to go out and go to a bank. Now, I had to, again, put my home up as part of the collateral for the working capital.
That was quite a risk.
Well, yeah, because it meant Adelaide, my wife, had to actually sign that document, because the Family Protection Act was there, which was, again, a huge step for her, with four young kids, like, massive. But thankfully she had faith in me, and thankfully I'm here to tell the story.
It must have been very difficult setting up a business in the mid-1980s Ireland.
Yeah. Yes, but it was wonderful. I was blessed with luck. Within a year, I got a contract with James Mackey in Belfast, a very large textile manufacturing company. Now, making textile machinery, not textile per se. I was supplying him raw materials, steel, iron ore. I was supplying the fuel. The man who was in charge gave me the contract, because when I was working in my previous employment, I helped him to keep his factory open during the miners' strike. And he remembered it when I set my own company. And I remember Matt say, come up to me, and he gave me a contract. That contract was worth £1 million in 1986.
How did you help him keep the factory open during the strike?
Because all of the British mines were closed. And Robin came up to Dublin. I met him in the Burlington Hotel, a man I've never met before in my life. And he said, can you help me? And I, to my wit and whatever, I found, it was actually called Foundry Coke. I found it in Bulgaria. I found it in Germany. I found it in Belgium. And I brought it in shiploads. And that kept him open. And I could tell stories about the journeys we went on to the mines to find that Foundry Coke. They were amazing. Now
you went travelling to all these places at that time, Bulgaria.
Yeah, and he came with me. And the other thing, he became chairman of my company, Robin Patton. I remember when I asked him to join the board, I was opening my company, my first head office in Clan William Square. And I said, Robin, would you join the board? And Adelaide, my wife, was standing beside him. And she said, why are you asking Robin? And Robin got afraid because he was a Northern Ireland unionist, right? Protestant, right? And she said, well, there's only room in the bath for two of us because we used to have our board meeting in the bath. And that meant that Robin... So he became a great friend. And then about 4 years later, I made him chairman of the board. As I said, he's passed since.
And that was a very successful early contract with Mackey's. You also would have got contracts early on, some of them with companies you're still doing business with today.
Oh, yeah. Remember that the early stages of the company for the first 4 or 5 years was actually predominantly due with the chemical industry. I completely diversified within 5 years into the food supply side of it because Ireland was maturing into a high-valued added food manufacturing country. And I saw myself actually not being in the chemical industry. And chemicals were actually kind of bad. I mean, you know, they had this kind of perception of being bad. So I diverted into the food sector. And that's where my predominancy is still to this day.
And what was it like doing business in Eastern Europe in the 1980s?
Well, remember, I was traveling in Eastern Europe from the early 70s or the middle 70s, because when I worked in my previous job, I was in charge of shipping out of there. So again,
so you knew everybody you needed to know.
But again, like traveling in Poland was a dream. It was such an excitement as a young man going there and such a relief to get out of it. So before Perestroika, you had this amazing excitement of going in there and meeting people and having these meetings at 7 o'clock in the morning with a bottle of vodka on the table. And then you'd be there for 2 weeks and you just couldn't wait to get out. And getting out of Poland in those days and other Eastern European countries, there was highly strict regulations about getting out, including how much money you had in your pocket, because the zloty was, the exchange rate on the open market, like, was, you could get 10 times what you would be get, we say, in a banking and exchange rate. So it was amazing.
Putting the bottle of vodka on the table at 7 o'clock in the morning after two weeks, it's a lot of vodka.
Well,
you're drinking it.
The vodka was really more to do with courtesy, but it was also to warm you up because you'd become, I was traveling there like when it would be minus 20. So you'd be coming from your hotel, you'd walk to the head office of the big, these were state companies. And the first thing you'd get would be a glass of vodka. And as a young man, you'd just throw it back and get on with it.
Was it difficult to have a sense of what's really going on here? In these were communist countries, they were particular regimes. Were you able to figure out, is this person who they say they are? Who's that person? What's really going on?
You had no idea. And like when you saw people queuing on the street for basic essentials, but it in the 70s and 80s, it was fascinating. And sometimes scary. Sometimes scary because you were never certain about, as you say, the people you were talking to, what was the conversation going to be like? You never had dinner on your own with anybody in the East Europe. You always had dinner with at least two and more than likely three or four.
Now, developing the business in China, it must have been very interesting times to do business there. Were there any hairy moments or back to the wall moments at any stage?
Well, I was talking about a project we're looking at the moment, which is actually crickets, which is a high protein product, which you're looking at the moment. But I remember the first occasion I was traveling to China with my business partner, David Angel from Clonmel. And we were in a particular town or city, tier one city in China. And our host served us a beautiful meal. And in the end, we asked what we were eating. And I'd say 60% of the meal on the table was bugs.
Bugs.
So I have a full experience of eating bugs. And I'm now looking at a project of cricket. And I was actually talking to Mexico, a friend of mine in Mexico yesterday, who's already harvesting crickets. And that's my next venture.
What might you do with those? Would they form ingredients in another thing, or would people actually just be eating insects?
Effectively, you'd replace the meat with meat protein with a cricket protein. And you'd make burgers.
Burgers.
And actually, like my son told me yesterday, we've already done a contract into parts of, I think, either Austria or Switzerland, selling our pea protein, which is part of the recipe to make a burger using cricket protein.
So back in China, when you'd eaten the bugs, most of the meal was bugs, you only found out afterwards, were they good?
I can assure you, Richard, I've eaten them many, many times. They're absolutely delicious. Delicious. And if you ever go to Uganda, by the way, there's a certain season in the year where they fly in and they catch them in the evening, they deep fry them and you get them in the side of the street and they're absolutely gorgeous with salt and pepper. Wonderful protein, but really good. Believe me, this is a market that is going to grow exponentially.
And do you think that could be big for you, for the group?
Well, first of all, it's green. And once you harvest them correctly, in actual fact, you're guaranteed that this is going to be a food of the future, superfood.
Well, Maurice Healy, founder and CEO of the Healy Group, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you. Pleasure.